If we were not put asunder by the West, we would have got rid of them long ago. But it's all been a conspiracy. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. There's a lot of historic evidence to show that Arabs and Muslim leaders, plus the British, the French, and blah, 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 conspired against us to give Palestine away to the Jews and get rid of us. We emphasize, after 100 years, we are still standing and we are still fighting back. Learn it, Israelis. You will never get rid of us. Never, ever.
Now, Mr. Jaffer, in a statement on the occasion of International Goods Day on Thursday, the Iranian Foreign Ministry said that the Islamic Republic, this is a direct quote of Iran, believes the establishment of tranquility and lasting peace in Palestine will be possible only through the settlement of key issues associated with the Palestinian crisis, including the cessation of occupation, the return of refugees, the determination of Palestine's future system based on a referendum attended by all main residents of Palestine, and finally, the establishment of an integrated Palestinian government. The fact that the Palestinian government is not integrated, the fact that a lot of Palestinians don't respect the Palestinian Authority, how does that impact the future of and the strength of the Palestinian nation today? And we've heard the word referendum. A few countries, a lot of supporters of the Palestinians have said a referendum is needed in occupied. Would that achieve, and would that be a tool that could unify people, a referendum?
Yes, of course. People should be asked. I mean, we are in the 21st century, and Mr. Abbas's mandate has run out in 2009. He's been ruling over the West Bank without a mandate. Hamas is the same. I mean, I do not want to demonize either or. We, the Palestinians, we need unity. Very simple. Your foreign minister is right. There's got to be a referendum. Everybody should be asked. And as I said, organization like yours, you have an Arabic service, you could say, it's Aluna. Ask us. See what the Palestinians want. And with the internet nowadays, you can reach them in all parts of the world. And the Palestinians want unity. Palestinians want freedom. Palestinians want to go back to their homes. Some of them may not. They are entitled to have compensation. And just ask them. Ask them, what do you want? And what your foreign minister is actually calling for is the one-state solution. The one-state solution, what started, there was a movement called one-state solution, started in 1990s, and they came to my house in London, and they invited me to join. And I declined, because there are some items in their, if you like, memorandum of understanding that I said, good luck to you, go and test the ground and see what happened. Nothing happened, because I will say it loud and clear. Israel does not want peace. Not with the Palestinians, not with the Arabs, not with the Iranians, definitely, and not with the Muslims. What Israel wants is greater Israel, from the brook of the Nile to the Euphrates. We saw Mr. Smotrich 2 weeks ago in Paris, when he was standing on the podium delivering a speech denying our very existence, the map of greater Israel was in front of him. This is what they want. And what did Jordan do when they saw the map? They protested. You just can't use words with these people. You've got to show some force. And here, I'm not talking about armed force. Diplomatic force. Withdraw your representation. Say to them, the Wadi Araba agreement was no good. Say to them, the Oslo Accords were no good. And let the people free to deal with them. Because as I said before, we can deal with them. but we cannot deal with them with the knife of our so-called brethren in our back. Time to unite, time to say right is right, and if we keep doing the same mistakes again, we will never advance.
Okay, Mr. Jaffa Remy, I want you to stay on the line, joining us there from Perth. Don't go anywhere. We're going to show a small clip to our viewers. I'm going to go ahead and sign off. Millions of people you're watching on Press TV worldwide are marking International Goods Day in solidarity with the oppressed people of Palestine. We're conducting rolling coverage covering, and we're going to have a slew of guests joining us to share their thoughts on what International Goods Day stands for and what it means to them and the significance of this day, the last Friday of the fasting holy month of Ramadan. I'm going to hand it over now to my esteemed colleague Marzia Hashimi right after this message.
Welcome back. As you may know, Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, in 1979 issued a message to Muslims across the world calling the month of Ramadan as the World Quds Day to support the Palestinian people and their sacred cause. He had asked the world Muslims and their governments to get united to cut the hands of the usurper Israeli regime. The Imam considered this day not just the Day of Palestine, but the Day of Islam. World Quds Day is Imam Khomeini's precious initiative to unite the Islamic world. Today, this issue has turned into a humane issue as free-spirited people all over the globe shout for the liberation of Palestine. Before the declaration of the World Quds Day by Imam Khomeini, symbolic days had been recorded at the UN, such as the Earth Day or the Day of Solidarity with Palestinians, but they were just ceremonial. The Earth Day had aimed at solidarity of Palestinians and persuading them to resist against the gradual occupation of the land by the usurper Zionists. The United Nations on November 29, 1948, called the day as the Day of Solidarity with Palestinian people to cover up its historical role in the occupation of this land through the ratification of Resolution 181 of the General Assembly. But the World Quds Day is different in several ways. Firstly, Palestine and the Holy Beit al-Muqaddas have turned into the focal point of unity of Muslims all over the world. Dear listeners, here we go live to Press TV headquarters to have the latest developments and news about the World Quds Day. Stay with us, please.
In various countries, they actually held their Day of Thoughts demonstrations earlier, and we will be bringing you some of those images from a few days ago in places like the United States and Canada already held their demonstrations. But of course, here in the Islamic Republic of Iran, we'll be bringing you live images from across this country. And already this morning, we have had images coming in from other parts of the world, from various African countries, from Kashmir, from Malaysia, and we will continue to bring you the various images from across the world. Of course, this is the Day of Quds. This is the 44th Day of Quds, which is historic in itself. Looking at the background of this day is very important. As we know, 1979 was the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, and Imam Khomeini, the leader of the revolution at that time, immediately after the victory, first of all, they declared that there would be no Israeli embassy in Iran anymore, and immediately gave that embassy to the Palestinians. The first Palestinian embassy in the world was opened then in the Islamic Republic of Iran, and he declared the last Friday of the month of Ramadan a day of solidarity with the Palestinians, that Muslims all over the world and others should come out and declare their solidarity with the Palestinians and stand up against the injustice of the Israeli regime. And of course, that was more than four decades ago, and now we have seen it grow in mass, Muslims and non-Muslims coming together to show their disdain for the Israeli regime. And of course, today, 2023, this last Friday of the month of Ramadan, is no different. We're going to be talking to a host of guests today from various parts of the world, getting their perspective, and also talking about various actions that perhaps are being done in their part of the world. I'm going to start this section off right here in Tehran with journalist Sayed Zafar Mehdi. I believe I have Sayed Zafar right now. Sayed Zafar, can you hear me? Okay, perhaps I don't have him. Anyway, we will be showing you these images, as I said, from various parts of the world and the importance of this day in general, because as the situation, the pressure has increased on the Israeli regime, we see how important the Day of Quds was from the beginning and is becoming more and more important and effective every day. Here we're looking at various live images. This coming out of Iran, from the Islamic Republic of Iran, as people are starting to gather. Now it's about 10:12 in the morning here in Iran, and about 10:12 in Iran right now, and people have started to gather. Here we have the city of Arak, and we'll be looking at various images throughout the country. Let me switch back. Sayed Zafar, do I have you?
Salam, yes.
Salam, thank you so much for being with us. Well, Sayed Zafar, I started off just talking about the significance of the day. And I think, you know, people forget back in 1979, or don't know the history, back in 1979, when Imam Khomeini declared this day as the International Day of Quds, the last Friday of the month of Ramadan. I mean, this was a newly revolutionary country. It is quite amazing to me when we put it in perspective, like a new country and all the problems it has, and especially Iran and the situation that was taking place at the time. But in the middle of that, Imam Khomeini made a point of talking about the importance of the Palestinian cause. I'd like to hear your perspective on that.
Well, yes, as you mentioned, the founder leader of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, and also the present leader of the revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, both of them have repeatedly asserted that the issue of Palestine and the issue of Al-Quds is without any shade of doubt the most important, the most pressing, and the most legitimate concern for the Muslim world. And it has to be seen as a symbol of solidarity, as the focal point of unity by Muslims. And it goes without saying that this International Quds Day, which we are observing today, it has kept alive the Palestinian cause, despite attempts by the Zionist regime to justify its unjustifiable military occupation and subjugation. And of course, with the support from Western powers. Having said that, as you mentioned, Iran, unlike other Muslim majority countries, has steadfastly and firmly stood by the oppressed people of Palestine in their long-standing struggle against the illegitimate Zionist entity, to have their occupied homes back, to have their land back, to reclaim what essentially belongs to them. And it's part of this glorious legacy of Islamic revolution that Imam Khomeini spearheaded, and the political ideology, his political ideology. At the heart of this political ideology is support for the oppressed of the world, those who have no one to speak for them. It, as you rightly mentioned, who back in 1979 appealed to Muslims across the globe to extend their moral and material support to Palestinians. He declared the liberation of Jerusalem al-Quds a religious duty of all Muslims, and announced that the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan will be dedicated to this great struggle. And this was in line with Imam's vision to espouse unity in the Muslim world, which of course is centered around Palestine. Before the Islamic Revolution, the Zionists, together with, of course, Americans, they made desperate attempts to change the Islamic character of Al-Quds. For example, they tried excavations at Al-Aqsa Mosque. They tried. They made demography changes by forcibly expelling Muslims from there. And they faced, of course, they faced no resistance at that time. But the Islamic Revolution changed that, and it was in the initial stage. This was a newly founded country after the fall of Pahlavi regime. And it was Imam Khomeini who said, enough is enough. And he said he brought Muslims on one page as far as resistance to this occupying regime is concerned. And over the years, as we have seen, Al-Quds Day, International Al-Quds Day, has become synonymous with affirmation of solidarity with the oppressed people of Palestine in their struggle for the liberation of the third holiest site for Muslims. And importantly, Imam Khomeini stressed that Quds Day is not exclusive to Palestine and Al-Quds, but it aims to raise awareness about injustice, oppression, subjugation, occupation everywhere in the world, you know, from west to east. It's meant to raise the banner of resistance, raise the banner of revolt against all those powers who seek to suppress the voice of weak and powerless. And it calls for the unification of Muslim world against all those powers, including the Western hegemonic powers. And that's precisely why this day and this message resonates with all the campaigners of truth and justice across the world. In a way, I find striking similarity between Karbala and Palestine. You know, Karbala and Imam Hussein's uprising will always be relevant as long as there's oppression, there's injustice. Palestine is the Karbala of our times. And Imam Hussein's call, as we remember in the desert plains of Karbala 14 centuries ago, Halmin Nasrin Yansurna, is there anyone to help me? I think that call resonates today in the context of Palestine and, of course, in other places. And taking to the streets today to mark International Al-Quds Day is actually a response to that very same call. You know, expressing solidarity with the oppressed people of Palestine is a response to that very call by Imam Hussein. And that's perhaps why I see Imam Khomeini said supporting Palestine is an Islamic duty. It is the continuation of the same movement that started in the desert plains of Karbala 14 centuries ago. And again, with the grace of God, I'm sure right will prevail and falsehood will vanish. Yazids of today will meet the same fate as Yazid did 14 centuries ago.
All right. Thank you so much. Stay with us, viewers. You're looking at these live images now coming in from across the Islamic Republic of Iran. Images there you're looking at coming from the city of Arak here in Iran. As people are, as a matter of fact, just starting to gather in the Islamic Republic of Iran. Last night was the night of destiny or the night of power, and many people were up until morning, so some of them are getting a little bit. We see it all coming together, and they will come out in mass once again, showing their solidarity with the Palestinian people. And here, these images now are coming from the holy city of Mashhad. There, in the background, of course, the shrine of the eighth Imam Reza. So throughout the country, more and more people are taking to the streets. Now the southern city of Bandar Abbas here, that you can see these images. People carrying, of course, Palestinian flags, flags of the Islamic Republic of Iran, of Hezbollah, of various sectors of the resistance in general. As my guest said, Zafar said, that in so many ways, this is the line these days of who will come out for the oppressed. Is there anyone who's going to help the Palestinians? And here in Iran, from the very beginning, since the revolution, that call has been steadfast. And of course, now with the spread of the resistance movement, we see a strengthening of that call. We see more and more pressure on the Israeli regime. These are live images coming out of the capital now, out of Tehran, there that people, of course, are starting to gather here in the capital. Well, Sayed Zafar, let's talk about, because I started off in talking about the very beginning in 1979, and let me just say it was a very, very different situation back then. The Israeli regime was quite strong. The American regime was quite strong back then. And in the middle of that, of course, this is very important, the setting that Imam Khomeini chose to do this. And now we fast forward 44 years later. We see the situation changing. Of course, the way the Israeli regime has dealt with the Palestinians have just continued to be as bad as it was in the beginning. But the backlash that is starting to happen, it seems that people, more and more people from around the world are having a growing distaste for the brutality of the Israeli regime. Your assessment of that, do you see a change? Do you see that in your analysis of what's happening, do you see more and more, not just people from across the world, Muslim and non-Muslim, act against the Israeli regime?
Of course. The falsehood will not last long. You know, it will eventually be exposed. And what we are seeing right now is a growing awareness around the world, the realized Western world, including in European countries, even in America. People are beginning to realize and understand how evil this regime is and how evil its activities in the occupied territories are. And also, you can see the farce of normalizations is also coming to an end. You know, attempts to build an Iran, anti-Iran coalition in the region have proved futile. Attacks on resistance groups in Gaza and West Bank have proved counterproductive. And of course, this existential crisis facing this illegitimate regime is becoming more real. And it's all because of this expansion of resistance axis, which is not limited to just this region now. Or you can find, as you can see right now, Al-Quds rallies. You can see. Them in all countries in massive scale. You can find them in India, you can find them in Malaysia, you can find them in African countries. So it shows that this farcical, this illegitimate regime is being exposed, and its days are numbered now. And this year's Quds Day, I should say, has assumed added significance in the light of these developments that have taken place, especially in the recent months. You know, the normalization in the region, Iran and Saudi Arabia agreeing to resume diplomatic ties, other Arab countries also coming forward to restore or upgrade ties with Iran. At the same time, Saudi Arabia and Syria also agreeing to resume diplomatic ties. Other countries also following the same line. So it shows not just people, even the governments across the world, including in this region, are distancing themselves from this regime now. And this farce of normalization is over now. And you can see this regional diplomacy drive that is currently going on. And with many countries lining up to normalize ties with both Iran and Syria, the two arch foes of this regime, it's not a good news for Netanyahu and his Zionist lackeys. This is a new West Asia, and this is the new world that this regime has to deal with. And the frustration is evident. As you can see, we recently saw attacks on government Syrian government forces in Syria, and then it won't help this regime escape the existential crisis that it's facing, but it will only speed up its annihilation. You know, it's important to note that this whole farce of normalization kicked off in 2020. It was part of this wider push to isolate Iran in this region. But as you can see now, things are backfiring on them, and that is how what happens when a regime is the foundation of a regime is based on falsehood, is based on lies, is based on treachery, and it will eventually fall. And the fall of this regime will be a staggering fall in the case of this Israeli illegitimate and apartheid regime.
Well, you talked about just now in dealing with how it's changing across perhaps civil society throughout the world. As a journalist, said Zafar, I want to look at it from that perspective, the perspective of the media, because we know a big part of the facade, the lie of the Israeli regime and trying to claim legitimacy. First, we had the political realm, but a big part of it, keeping that lie alive, was coming from mainstream media. I want to talk about that. One, the role of the mainstream media in promoting this illegal regime, and now the role of resistance media. Do you see that growing and actually pointing out and making people aware of the lack of the legitimacy of that regime?
Well, yes. See, this regime has always, it has survived and thrived for so long because of Western patronage, because of Western support, and that includes the support of Western media. And you can see when we have cases of Israeli military raids in occupied West Bank, you know how Western media has always twisted and turned sort of to distorted the truth. It has presented those raids as a form of self-defense. For example, you can remember the case of Shirin Abu Akleh. Many Western media outlets called the headlines mentioned a Palestinian journalist dies. It was not mentioned a Palestinian journalist was murdered in cold blood. So that's how the truth has always been a sort of a truth becomes casualty when in a situation like this. And in case of Palestine, the Western media has always followed the line of the Western hegemonic powers, and that is, it has always come to the rescue of the regime and not allowed to expose its illegal and apartheid activities in these occupied territories. But now, as you can see when people begin to realize the reality of this farcical illegitimate regime, then obviously the media cannot sustain the same line. So now, as you can see, even the media in the West are beginning to mention. For example, we saw recent riots, we saw recent protests in Tel Aviv, and Western media also mentioned that. But let's get this straight also. A lot of Western media still is trying to sort of justify what Netanyahu is doing. They are mentioning it as a judicial reform, as a lot of headlines we can see. In my opinion, this is not a reform by any stretch of imagination. You know, illegitimate regimes cannot bring reform. This is Netanyahu's attempt to hijack the judiciary and sort of render it toothless, because he doesn't want to end up in jail for his large-scale corruption. So Israelis have begun to realize that, and I think that's one area that Western media should also realize, that they cannot justify, or they cannot come to Netanyahu's rescue all the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So stay with me, Sayed Zafar Mehdi. Again, viewers, you're looking at these live images coming out of Tehran, the capital of Iran, as more and more people are turning out for this day of Quds. We're showing you images from all over the country, but now we're going to switch over to Syria, actually, and let's see what's going on in Damascus. Crossing over our correspondent, Muhammad Ali. Great to have you with us, Muhammad Ali. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me clearly?
I can hear you, Muhammad Ali. Well, tell us what's going on in Syria today, the day of Quds.
Yes, I am now in the Yarmouk Palestinian refugee camp in Damascus, perhaps the largest Palestinian refugee camp in the region over here, which was hit by the crisis and the war in this country. Today, thousands of Palestinians have gathered to rally over here in this Palestinian refugee camp in order to send a message to the entire world that they will continue resisting Israel until defeating that entity and returning to their homeland and restoring, of course, their rights. Everyone here is asserting on their right of repatriation, asserting on their right of resistance, and they all underline the importance of this day in sending a message to the international community, to the entire world, that their option is resistance at the end of the day. And they want to send another message to the entire world that they will never forget their homeland, they will never forget Palestine, they will continue adhering to their just Palestinian cause. They also want to tell the international community to stop remaining silent over the crimes of Israel, especially that today, Al-Quds Day this year, is coinciding with more and more Israeli crimes, whether on Al-Aqsa Mosque or the Gaza Strip. Thousands will be rallying over here just behind me in a couple of minutes from now. Then Syria-based Palestinian factions will deliver speeches over here on this day. Of course, this is a very important area that this event is happening here in Syria. Al-Yarmouk refugee camp, it was devastated and destroyed by terrorism, which is supported, which was supported by the Israeli side at the end of the day. So this refugee camp symbolizes a lot for the Palestinians, since it's the largest, since they were even forced out of their homes, not just in Palestine, they were forced out of their homes in a refugee camp in Damascus. Returning to that camp now after the war ended in Damascus and sending those messages symbolize a lot for those people. They thanked Iran for setting up this day to perhaps wake up the international community and the entire world every year and tell them that they have to support this just cause. Finally, it's very important also to point out that many of the leaders of the Syria-based Palestinian factions thanked Iran for this day. They said that this day expresses Iran's actually principles, which is standing beside the oppressed and also against the aggressors. So it's definitely a very important day, a very important place that this is happening. Of course, this is happening in many countries across the world. Millions are rallying, but in Damascus, I think it symbolizes a lot.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Muhammad Ali, and I'm sure we may be crossing back over to you as things continue over there and perhaps for the speech later on. That's Muhammad Ali, Press TV's correspondent on the ground there in Damascus. Of course, this today, the Day of Quds, the last Friday of the month of Ramadan. We're going to be covering, bringing you images from across the world and, of course, and guests also from throughout the world giving their perspective on the significance of this day. Now you're looking at these live images coming from Tehran here in Iran on this Day of Quds as people are coming out in mass throughout this country. And, of course, the day is culminated actually with Friday prayers that will be in about an hour and a half or so. Again, live images here coming out of Tehran. As you can see, more and more people are joining the crowd. I've been talking to a guest this morning, and in general, just looking at the change in the Day of Quds from the very beginning, of course, 44 years ago until now, the situation on the ground in the occupied territories in Palestine, and also the supporters of the Israeli regime, the change that is happening as we see it every day now. The situation is changing. Zafar, do I still have you with me?
Yes, yes.
Zafar, I want to look at the, because we were talking a little bit ago about the role of the media and both sides, both the resistance side of the media and, of course, the mainstream media. in the middle of what we're seeing is a major transition of power from the West to the East. And in the middle of that, we have the situation, of course, with what's happening to the Palestinians and the resistance that seems to be growing in power. I want to look at this point in time, as far as the media, from your perspective, what is our major role? What role should the resistance media now be playing as we're seeing this transition and waking up more and more people to the reality of what's happening on the ground there in Palestine?
It's definitely the power is shifting from west to east, and I think the credit must be given to the resistance media, which, of course, is centered in Iran and, of course, in other countries, including Syria and Lebanon. The media, resistance media, in recent years has played a very impressive, a very inspiring role to sort of expose this the atrocities, to expose the apartheid nature of this regime. And of course, I should mention Press TV also, which has led from the front in this campaign to highlight what has not been sort of told and what has not been spoken about, what has not been heard about all these years, because the narrative was in the hands of Western media. They used to dictate what should be told and what should not be told. But in recent years, as we have seen, and Press TV leading from the front and other media from this region, West Asian region, they have played a critical role in sort of raising awareness about the Palestinian cause, the crimes of this illegitimate regime. And I think the biggest role is to expose the nature, the evil nature of this occupation. The role must be to giving voice to the voiceless people of Palestine in West Bank, in Gaza, in other places. And they have not been heard. I mean, as I mentioned, Western media has always tried to twist and to distort the true events, the real account of what's going on in those places. And I think the role of Western, role of resistance media, especially in this region, should be to not only expose the Israeli regime's atrocities, but also give voice to the voiceless people of Palestine, and that is something which I think Press TV has done admirably well, and also to raise awareness in terms of how we can reach the solution to this cause. As Iran has repeatedly mentioned, the referendum referendum is the viable solution to this crisis, and that includes ending occupation and, of course, the people of Palestine forming their own government and Palestinian city-state. So these things should be highlighted, not just from the perspective of what Western media says or what the regime of Israel wants people to know, but it should be reported and narrated from the perspective of what the people of Palestine want, and because they are the masters of their own destiny. They should not be told what they want and what they should seek. So in that case, I think media has a key responsibility in this case of continuing to report correctly and objectively and fairly what is going on in the occupied territories, and also in this recent, as I mentioned earlier, also in this whole recent protest which we saw, which was sort of framed as a judicial reform protest, which I don't agree with, because it's basically making this regime look more sort of colorful, because reform is not in the nature of illegitimate regimes, so it has to be seen the way it is. So media, including our own media, regional media, they should know how to report such things. And because basically this whole protest thing which we're seeing, it was part of this whole sort of campaign to sort of strengthen these structures of occupation and oppression, and that's how it should be seen. But yes, we should also give coverage to how the resistance groups are emerging, and it's what's remarkable, mm-hmm. is the emergence of a new generation of Palestinian resistance fighters who are hyper-localized. You know, they are operating in their small communities from Jenin to Nablus. While the armed wings of Hamas and Islamic Jihad are very active, but these small groups are, we are seeing decentralized model of resistance with these small groups. You know, so these are the kind of issues we should highlight more and more.
Again, live images you're looking, viewers, out of Shiraz right now. As more and more people are coming out on the streets throughout the Islamic Republic of Iran, and they're in the northeastern city of Mashhad. Also, people are coming out chanting slogans. I'm going to welcome my next guest to the program. Out of Sydney, Director of Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies, Tim Anderson. Tim, great to have you with us. Tim, I'm looking at these images and I'm thinking, of course, I'm old enough to remember. I'm thinking that looking at the Iranians on the streets right now, this has been going on for 44 years, that these people, despite their own problems and pressure, but from the very beginning could always see the importance of the Palestinian situation. I want to talk about that with you, Tim, start off from here. What we are seeing in this growing resistance, whether we're talking about, because we know people in Lebanon right now that they're under pressure, but, you know, and we see from Nigeria that Sheikh Zakzaki's Islamic movement, and they always are on the scene and standing up for the Palestinians. The importance of looking beyond self and seeing a cause such as the Palestinian cause as an issue for all of us.
It's an important modern tradition, as you say, 44 years, which is still fairly recent, to have this focal point every year at the end of Ramadan to focus on the Palestinian struggle. And it's important because it reaffirms commitments around the world. And of course, you know that some states are involved. Venezuela has its own commemoration of Al-Quds Day also. So that global networking, the integration, which is something the resistance hasn't had in the past, the integration of those of this type of solidarity, and specifically for the resistance, not in a vague sort of sense, because there is a vague sense of solidarity in the West, which is really a very compromised form. But the commitment to the resistance, I think, is particularly important. That sort of integration and unifying the voices on that front is very important, because that's one area where the Zionists and the imperialists have had the upper hand for so many years, being able to integrate their media and coordinate. And so Al-Quds Day is a very important creation, as I said, to reaffirm that commitment and also introduce coordination amongst the various voices around the world.
Well, you just talked about, Tim, you talked about how the mainstream media has used, of course, their forum to promote the Israeli regime. And, of course, now on this side of things, we have a growing responsibility. Hopefully we can live up to it to show the reality that's on the ground. I want to look at, though, in general, Tim, when we look at the situation with the media, it is absolutely amazing when we see what is happening on the ground day to day now, that, for example, this year, 2023, it almost unfortunately seems to be set for record murder against the Palestinians. We already have over 100 Palestinians killed this year on the West Bank. When we see the major silence of the mainstream media, it is quite amazing that in this world, if we want to say, of technology and immediate information getting out, that they are still adamant about keeping these lies of the reality, of the brutality of the regime, trying to hide it. I mean, we have seen, it hasn't been a year yet, that Shirin Abu Akhle was assassinated by the Israeli regime. No one was held accountable. There was no trial. There was nothing. Shirin was also American. But nothing is said in the mainstream media. No follow-up, nothing. And how are they able, in the middle of all this technology, as I said, to keep and continue to suppress the truth in the way that they do?
Well, they're very well coordinated. I wouldn't even call them mainstream. I'd say they are an elite corporate media which is very well embedded with the NATO states. And, of course, they have support from the large investing groups, the large corporations. You would have seen perhaps recently that the German government is banning demonstrations in support of Palestinian prisoners, for example. So there are extreme reactionary currents which still have important influence and are very well embedded with states and embedded with universities, institutions, you know, suppressing, trying to silence voices that break this monopoly that this elite media has. They, in many respects, are directing the state. I've found in my experience that some moderately progressive politicians, once they achieve some sort of office, they are very afraid of the power of this corporate media. I call them the colonial media or the war media, the power of this media to destroy their reputations, attack them, and so discipline them. So we have a global oligarchy, if you like, really speaking, an Anglo-American oligarchy, which is enforcing the silencing of these voices that say, well, let's draw attention to this rather than that, basically. And but nevertheless, there are gaps there. There are gaps that we've been able to pick, and I think the coordination of those gaps, I mean, we've been using the US social media, which is still deeply controlled but has some spaces in there, basically. So that level of coordination is still to be there, though. For example, Iranian media talks about Yemen a lot. No one else talks about Yemen, the crimes being committed in Yemen, and who's responsible for them. And there's a great tragedy, or crime really, being carried out by the fact that the UN Security Council up until now has sanctioned the siege and the war on Yemen, for example. So I think a greater coordination of those elements is needed, because really, when you talk about what you call the mainstream media, they are linked into states, they are linked into big investment groups. They also control most of the social media. They control things like Wikipedia and so on, which has its method linked into that same corporate media. So they are very well networked in a way we shouldn't underestimate the capacity of the enemy in this sort of respect. And the weakness of the resistance in some respects has to pay attention to that and say, well, what are we doing to build the coordination and our networking to unify those voices and to elevate the issues that we feel are the most important?
All right, stay with me, Tim. Viewers, we're looking at these live images. They're coming out of Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, as protesters there have gathered in front of the American embassy there in Kuala Lumpur. As I said earlier, we have images coming in from across the world today. Kuala Lumpur, there you can see that people have turned out in mass. They have the Palestinian flags, the Malaysian flag there, in front of the American embassy, calling out the crimes of the Israeli regime. Well, Tim, you were talking about corporate media. I want to look at, in general, when we look at the situation that is happening, because you're in Australia, I want to look at that aspect, because there's another part to all of this. It's also the Zionist influence. It's the Israeli lobbies in a lot of these countries that put pressure, whether it's on the politicians, whether it's on the corporate media. I want to look at that aspect, and particularly Australia, that you're there, and the way that they have influence in general, have such influence in Australian society.
Many spheres, and the corporate media is not the least of them, but they are also financing universities, they are financing other sorts of enterprises. So really, they have a disproportionate power to their numbers, basically. But the very anxiety, the fact that these incredibly intense campaigns are run, for example, against, say, Jeremy Corbyn in Britain when he was the leader of the Labour Party at that stage, shows that there's a deep anxiety by the Zionists. They are very worried about losing ground there. They're concerned about their major sponsors, particularly in Britain and the US, for example, if they lose some ground there. And by the way, there is now this dispute between, which I think is actually quite significant, between the Biden administration and the Netanyahu regime. I think these sort of internal contradictions are, and the divisions and the weaknesses are quite important, particularly in face of a resistance which is growing in its coordination, growing in some of its unified actions. But yes, the Zionist voice remains very important and remains very anxious. They don't want to, but many of them are afraid of the open acceptance of the apartheid status of this regime, which will mean that they are in breach of international law openly and publicly and facing an anti-apartheid campaign. That's the liberal side of Zionists. The other side doesn't care so much, but they're very concerned to maintain their sponsors. So I think we should start looking at the factions and the divisions between the factions in the Zionist regime and see how they are always trying to divide the resistance. Of course, this has been their main tactic in West Asia, hasn't it, for years. If they can't carry out regime change, they want to weaken, attack, and divide and break states up into little fragments, basically. Divide and rule has been an imperial theme for a long time. So I think the divisions within the Zionist movement itself and its anxiety should become a target of the resistance too.
Indeed, again. Viewers, you're looking at these live images there, this time out of Rasht in Iran, where we see turnout in mass. I want to reiterate that, of course, this is the month of Ramadan. So people that we're seeing out on the streets, whether we're talking about Kuala Lumpur or Tehran or Rasht or wherever, the majority of these people are actually fasting. Now, it happens that, of course, this year, the month of Ramadan is in spring, and in a lot of these places, perhaps it hasn't gotten so hot. Of course, we have seen the Day of Quds in the middle of summer, and despite this, the point of it is that people are turning out in mass. And there you can see out of Dar es Salaam that people have turned out. We have multiple images there, Kuala Lumpur, Isfahan, and Tehran. That these people, and it is significant that the Day of Quds is actually in the month of Ramadan. It is as if that Imam Khomeini was showing to the level that the people are willing to sacrifice and stand up for the Palestinians, that they're out on the streets, not eating, not drinking, no matter the weather condition, but still coming out, and it has been 44 years now that they have come out. We're going to switch over to Tehran. Right now, I believe I have our correspondent on the ground, Kujuri. Saman, do I have you?
Yes, Marcia, I can hear you.
All right, Saman, well, tell us what's going on where you are.
Well, Marcia, I'm talking to you from Palestine Square to the Englob Avenue, actually. And as you can see around me, people are coming out in numbers, in high numbers, to take part in the International Quds Day rallies. As you know, this is an international day which was designated back in 1979 by the late founder of the Islamic, leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, late Imam Khomeini. Since then, every year, on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan, Muslims and also freedom seekers all around the world in different cities, not just in Iran, but in different cities and countries around the world, take part in such demonstrations to draw the attention of world public opinion towards the atrocities committed by Israel against the Palestinians. The International Quds Day has become a symbol of resistance, has become a kind of a symbol of awakening. Towards the issue of Palestine and who are just under Israeli atrocities for several decades now. If I wanted to draw your attention to the history behind the designation of the International Quds Day, I should say that back in 1948, when the occupation of Palestine began, many religious scholars were demanding justice for Palestinian people. After the victory of the Islamic Revolution back in 1979, the late founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, late Imam Khomeini, said that one of his goals was the liberation of Palestine. And from then on, all political and all any sort of ties with Israel were broken. And later on, with a new raid by Israel against south of Lebanon, the late Imam Khomeini, in a speech designated the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan as the International Boats Day, saying that this day should be held revered, actually, and many Muslims around the world should commemorate the day in order to keep alive the plight of Palestinians. And Palestine became the number one issue of the Islamic world. And today we see that every year, not just Muslims, but those who are freedom seekers, even non-Muslims, join such rallies, not just in Iran, but different countries around the world, to join hands in order to remember and remind and keep alive what they have seen. And actually, this is a kind of a message to Israel and the supporters of Israel across the world, that these people are united and they have already formed a united front against Israel and their allies, not just in the region, but around the world. Most people who are taking part in these rallies here in Tehran, as I'm standing, are calling for an end to Israel occupation of Palestine. And it's good to note, Marisia, that back in 1988, 1 year, 78, 1 year after Imam Khomeini designated the year, with the numerous attacks by Israel against Palestinians, even committee of the Organization of the Islamic Conference also said that the International Quds Day rallies should be held in public places. And actually, with this announcement, which was on the path after the leader of the Islamic Revolution, the late founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, designated the day, it was actually injected the fresh energy into rallies against Israel. So what we see today is that people come out in high numbers, not just in Tehran, but in different cities, to mark the occasion and to send out this message to the outside world that Israel should put an end to its occupation of Palestine, and Palestinians' lands belong to Palestine, and Palestinians are the main owners of those lands. So we see that fasting Muslims here are here to say that they will never leave Palestine alone, and they will keep Palestinian causes all alive. Marcia.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Saman Khojouri, Press TV's correspondent on the ground there, and I'm sure we'll be checking back with you a little bit later. Again, viewers, look at these images coming out of Tehran there as people are marching and, of course, chanting various slogans. And little by little, what happens is that they make their way towards the area of Friday prayer, and these demonstrations, protests, culminate with Friday prayer. And we're seeing all kinds of flags on the ground there from the resistance. There was Iraqi flag, Hezbollah flags, Iran, of course, and of course the Palestinian flags throughout these protests are being seen. Again, these are people coming out and fasting. This is in Isfahan there. In the very famous Imam Square there, as people have turned out also in mass in that city. Once again, we're seeing throughout the country, north, south, east, and west, that people definitely have responded to the call that was made 44 years ago by the late Imam Khomeini when he said for people to actually show their disdain for the Israeli regime, show their solidarity with the Palestinians. And these images now are coming out of the city of Tabriz this morning here in the Islamic Republic. And there you can see also out of Rasht. Switching back over to Sydney and Tim Anderson. You know, Tim, it's really interesting that every month of Ramadan, it almost seems as if the Israeli regime ups the ante with their brutality. I mean, we have seen since the beginning of this month these unbelievable raids on Masjid al-Aqsa, al-Aqsa Mosque, and, of course, the continued oppression on the West Bank. And it's interesting because even though they know there are eyes definitely looking at them, but they just do not care. I mean, what do you attribute that to? Is it because of basically the total support that they have from these Western regimes, or is it just their sheer arrogance? I mean, your overall assessment.
I think you're talking about the dominant faction in the colony at this stage, which has that disregard that you mentioned. I still think at the back of their minds there's an anxiety. They're worried they're going to be betrayed. They can't go on threatening the whole Palestinian population, threatening Iran, without looking for some assurance from their big sponsors. You know, the big sponsors are the ones